This is exactly right.
Hi, I'm Erin Welsh.
And I'm Erin Alman Updike, and we're the hosts of This Podcast Will Kill You on Exactly Right.
We're back with our seventh season, which is bigger and better than ever.
Because guess what? We're now a weekly show.
This season, we're tackling everything from long COVID to norovirus, from the supplement industry to IVF, and so, so much more.
New episodes drop every single Tuesday.
Follow This Podcast Will Kill You wherever you get your podcasts.
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Real good. Yourself?
Good. Thank you.
Good. Good.
Good.
Good.
This is My Favorite Murder.
We're a podcast that talks about true crime stories and really breaks them down.
Yep. And that's all we talk about.
That's not true. There is a lot of lying on this podcast.
And we don't. Yeah. This is pretty exactly how it goes.
Yeah, if you don't like it, go away.
Don't. Karen gets real mad at you guys sometimes. I feel like people kind of like at live shows, they like when you yell at them.
Uh-huh.
So they'll purposely like scream something.
Well, I mean, some of those live shows, it's like those people have never been in a theater or been to a live show before.
Yeah.
It's just like drunk girls who are repeat yelling the same thing over and over. That's not how you act.
Mm-mm.
Then you hear other people shushing those people.
Oh, God.
It's just intense. It's just like it feels like there's a fight's going to break out.
And it might be with you.
Oh, that's fine with me. I'm thoroughly trained.
You love a bar fight. God, I'm sorry. Hold on.
I do have some corrections from the last couple.
Okay.
Speaking of the live show, in the Boston show that we posted, I referenced the blog name. I did it for Jody. I said that was a reference to Mark David Chapman, but that's incorrect. I meant John Hinckley Jr., the man who tried to assassinate Reagan. He said when he was brought in that he did it for Jodie Foster. He was obsessed with Jodie Foster.
Oh.
I was talking about Mark David Chapman. That's the man who shot John Lennon.
Got it. I was about to say, he's the one who shot John Lennon. So,
were you about about my guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, the three name guys, it's hard. And then the ones who everybody theorizes are actually government robots.
Do they?
Yeah, that's both of those guys. There's a lot of theorizing that it's like an MK Ultra situation.
Like the nerdy as fuck guys, you just like kind of get them mixed up.
They definitely are both in the nerd group. If this was the Westminster Dog show.
One of them has... That's hilarious. I want to pause for a moment to acknowledge that.
Thank you.
Instead of going on to saying that, which one had Catcher in the Rye in his back pocket, which is like the best book ever if you're in high school?
That was Mark David Chapman.
Okay.
Yes, because he's the one that shot John Lennon.
Right.
And he had John Lennon sign Catcher in the Rye.
Right, which is just like, all right,
yeah.
calm down.
I mean, Jesus.
Like, come on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
What else?
That mistake. Also, kind of in the same vein, when you were talking about Sam Shepard and you told that story, I began to confuse Sam Shepard with Dr. Jeffrey McDonald, who also killed his whole family or is suspected of.
He's the one with there was saying there's three crazy people. They like to say these things.
Yes. Your guy, Sam Shepard, was in the early 60s.
Uh-huh.
My guy that I was thinking you were talking about was in 69.
Mm-hmm.
And so the whole time, that's why at one point in that episode, I was like, what year was it? Because I was like, in my mind, there's no way there could be two doctors who killed their whole families and were like guilty or like suspected and also equally not suspected.
And got away. Well, this is Sam Shepard's the one.
Sham.
He's a sham. Sam Shepard's the one who got kind of famous afterwards.
Yeah.
And like was kind of a douche.
I mean,
they were both, but.
And
they both didn't kill their children who were sleeping in the bedroom next to where they killed their wives.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't want to agree because I'm
allegedly
not sure.
Killed their wives. All right.
But Dr. Jeffrey McDonald is the one who Fatal Vision is about, and who is also the one who the Errol Morris new novel that's basically a refuting Fatal Vision is about.
Wait, so refuting saying that he did or didn't do it?
Fatal Vision was basically Joe McGinnis making friends with Jeffrey McDonald and then being like, here's how he did it. Mm-hmm. And then when, like in Errol Morris's book, which I just got a book on tape of, they basically break down how it was just super mishandled and like it was just, they were trying to make money helter skelter style.
Got it.
And it was, you know, the whole thing was kind of unfairly presented, I guess.
Okay.
But I have to listen to the whole thing before I sure do love to talk about things I don't know that much about.
No, I feel like you shouldn't listen. Let's hear it now.
Let's just theorize. Yeah. Much like when I talked about scuba diving and I said that you have to have a partner because there's no way you can check your things.
Yeah.
Well, of course, then. Everyone on Twitter's like, yes, you can check your things.
Who cares? It's not like someone's going to be like under the water.
What if they did, though?
Karen said... Like, that's, you didn't need to correct that. You know what I mean?
I mean, here's the thing though. It's those little lies.
Yeah.
It's the same one as I said that my dad got chemotherapy 3 times a week. And then I thought about it this morning. I'm like, he got it once a week. Then he got it for like, you know, 3 months or something like that.
Yeah.
But just as I talk, it's just all like blah, blah, blah.
But you sound so confident about it.
I know.
Like, I wouldn't. Confident. No. I want to apologize to you for correcting you so vehemently and cockily about not saying the word hobo anymore.
Oh yeah, but the audience was already making that sound.
Oh, they were. We don't.
I think so.
Okay.
Well, it shouldn't come from thank me. You for apologizing. Yeah. I just did.
Transient. Transient. Spell it.
But why though? I just need a good reason.
Because hobo is it's a negative term that insinuates that, I don't know. It's slang.
So what?
I don't know. Don't ask me why.
Well, I'm just saying I'm not going to change it until I get the reason. Sex worker is because prostitute is a negative and it actually makes people, when people see the word, they immediately judge the person and like lessen
the
value.
That.
Hobo, how?
Okay. Though? I don't know.
I just want to know. I'm sure there's someone out there that knows.
I bet they're going to tell us.
Yeah, okay. I'd love to know.
Okay.
Because maybe it's like host stands for this and Bo stands for that type of thing.
Yeah.
I want to know what it is, though.
Yeah.
Because I feel like in this day and age, there's things people can't do, and it's just because some other person decided we're not doing that anymore.
Yes.
I don't like that stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I just think it sounds really dismissive of the circle. Like, but I get it that it's just because I've heard that before. It's just like, that old hobo, you know what I mean? It's just... It's dismissive of the.
I say it with love in my heart.
Sounds pretty rad. Like,
it's a guy with a hole in his boot.
Yep.
That's gonna cook up a can of beans over a fire. It's all fun. Good.
Did you hear about the chick in Seattle? And I'm sure you did because every single person in the world tweeted it at us. But the girl who was running in the park in Seattle in Ballard, which is like a nice little community, who got attacked in the bathroom, in the public bathroom in the park, which I'm terrified of those. And she fucking fought him and said, not today, motherfucker. And here's the gray area is like, you don't want to say how badass she is because that's sending the message that you should always fight once, you know, it's just such a situational thing and like reading the situation. So you don't want to be like, beat the shit out of the person attacking you because that could be the absolute wrong thing to do in that situation.
Yes, I say in all of these scenarios, anything in life is a case by case situation.
Right.
And just because we're saying it out loud doesn't mean it's a rule of any kind.
No,
nobody needs to hear that in particular. But, also I think in a situation like that, those bathrooms, it's like a secluded, she knows she's secluded in a park and then even more so in that bathroom. It's a man inside the woman's bathroom. There's nothing about this that can be turned around. So go for it.
Yeah, that's true.
Go for it. You know, as a human being when you are in real danger.
Right.
That's then just allow those instincts to take over. I would say.
Yeah, I think it's all instinctual. I don't think it's any thinking at that point.
Right.
Well, fuck, man.
And I like the idea that, like, I think, didn't she say she had taken a self-defense class? And so that's what, where that came from is just like, because that's the thing they teach you is you just start fucking yelling.
Well, the thing I really did like about it, and that I think what I took away from it is that she, at one point, she, you know, she was fighting him, and at one point she thought in her mind, this doesn't have to be a fair fight. And she, so, in her, you know, it wasn't like wrestling. It was, then she said, I started clawing at his face.
Yes.
And I think that that to me kind of hit me because it was like, this doesn't have to be civil. This can be fucking out of control.
Yes. If there is someone in the bathroom that came into the bathroom to harm you or touch you in any way that you don't want to happen, you go, the knee goes to the nuts, the fingers go to the eyes, and you fucking go for it, animal style, like they serve it in and out. You fucking go for it.
Yeah, put some fucking Thousand Island on that, you on that motherfucker. Put that Thousand Island beat down.
You melt that cheese on top of that beat down, girl.
And you fucking put some sauteed onions and some fucking Thousand Island beatdown.
Dude, it's called the Not Today Motherfucker Special, and you give it, you serve it up for free.
Animal style.
Yeah, 100%.
Bon appetit, motherfucker.
We have to take a class so we can talk about actual, I want to do it really bad.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
I think the reason that I hesitate, if I'm going to be totally honest, is because you know those suits that they make the people put on so that you can attack them?
Or the ones that the dog attacks, like to have the dog attack you?
Yeah, but I'm specifically talking about the ones where the guy has to stand there, but there's like a grate in front of his face, but everything else is pads. I'm scared of that.
Of that character or putting that on?
It looks like an off-brand Michelin man. It looks like the Michelin man in Malaysia. And I don't, that in and of itself is like horrifying. I think like stop me in my tracks.
Maybe it would make you fight him more. Maybe your instincts will kick in and you'll be like, well, I can do this.
Maybe I'm afraid that my animal instincts will kick in and I'll pull that fucking grate out of the face and then in with the fingers and the eyes.
Yeah.
Then I get sued.
Maybe you should.
Hey,
you know what? Why is this creepy guy teaching this class anyways? Like, what's really his motive? Now he has your address because you had to fill out a thing.
Now he has my credit card number
and your address.
And he's going to Del Taco every night on my dime.
I know.
That's bullshit.
Literal dime.
Who is this for?
Tuesday nights.
You can get so much stuff.
Oh my God. Oh man, I fucking hit that place so hard. And Vince is out of town. Oh my God.
Do you drive there?
Yeah. You mean because it's down the street from me?
It's not super close. Wait, I wouldn't say it's super close.
I drove home and went there, but I did go out of my way to go to Carl's Jr. like the day before.
Nice.
It's that fucking when the dog's away, the you know, the animals.
Yep. I bet you're farting all over this apartment too.
I was.
That's the fun of it. And you clean all up and you put on one of your nicer house dresses.
Yeah.
You're like, welcome home.
Oh, look how normal I am.
Look, I made you a casserole.
You married a normal wife. Way to go.
Totally normal. Wiping like weird beans out of the corner of your mouth.
Thousand Island. Anything else?
Those were all my mistakes.
That's it.
Bless me, Father, for I've sinned.
How long has it been since your last episode of My Favorite Murder?
It's probably been a good 10 years since my last confession.
Since you've been to confession?
Yeah.
I've always been creeped out by confession.
It is.
As a Jewish person, I'm like, fuck it, no.
It's super weird. And the fact that they introduce it to you when you're in third grade is the creepiest part because they explain it to you. And for me, the type of person I was, which is hating to do anything I've never done before, I couldn't get anybody to explain it enough to me.
Yeah.
Plus you have to have the Our Father, the Hail Mary, and the Act of Contrition all memorized perfectly. So if you're in there and it's your line, like you can't drop a line.
You're like, I just learned my ABCs.
Yes. I'm like, can you fresh out
calm down.
Like adding and subtracting. Yeah. And now I'm like, you have to recite an incantation to like just the shadow of a man's face behind. It is the oldest looking inside those.
And
things.
Who the fuck is he? Does he have your address? Your home address? You know what I mean? Like,
why did he want my child's credit card?
Why did he fucking? Who is he to say?
Who is he to take my hard-earned credit in third grade?
Yeah.
It's really crazily creepy.
What's cool about Hebrew when you're like doing the prayers and stuff is that A, they write it in, like, phonetically, so you can like just follow that, and also they you can just kind of make noise because the whole congregation singing it at once, you can just kind of you know, it's pretty great.
That is good.
So I don't know.
Do you? When's the last time you went to temple?
Oh my, years and years and years.
Oh
no,
I don't. Do you ever have the holiday thing where you're like, oh, it's.
Oh yeah, we go. We have holiday dinners. We get together for holidays, but and we'll say a couple of the prayers, but we don't.
But you don't take it into that temple, make it official.
No, we're very chill.
Right, right.
But I did have a bat mitzvah.
Did you stack that paper?
Kind of. I was bat mitzvahed by a lesbian.
Nice move. Yeah,
thanks, Mom.
That's really, really Orange, like opposite Orange County of you.
Yeah, I like that.
They don't really do stuff like that down there.
No, yeah, it's pretty sweet. Anyways.
It's surprising that you were a Jew in Orange County.
There weren't a lot of us.
I bet.
We had temple in a church.
What?
And we had Sunday school. I mean, we had Hebrew school in a Sunday school. So there was just like Jesus posters all over the wall.
They're like, you have an hour and no more.
Yeah. Baruch atah. Get it out of the way.
Goodbye. Yeah. We don't support what you're doing.
Shalom. Get the fuck out of here.
How about take a look at this New Testament? That's where all the action is.
So this is a podcast about true crime. Who went first at the last show? The live show? Steven?
You didn't.
I went first. Oh, you're right. Okay.
Yeah, Molly.
So it's me.
Yeah. What?
Everything's becoming a blur.
Oh, why? In what way?
If you had made me guess just now, it wouldn't be like a cute for the show thing. I had absolutely not only no idea who went first or last, I couldn't remember if it was a live show or a pre-recorded in this room show.
I get it. Like, I'm not
you
there.
You better.
I'm not there either. I'm far away.
Okay.
Why do I always remember lyrics to songs, Karen, that I haven't heard for years, but I always forget my email passwords?
I know, right? It's like our brains only want us to retain useless information, but with 1Password, that problem's solved.
1Password is an award-winning password manager that's trusted by families and large-scale companies alike.
If you're tired of being the person that everyone texts for a streaming login, hand that honor to 1Password. They let you share logins with people and with groups.
With 1Password, you can securely switch between any device type or operating system. That means if you're a family or business that uses both Mac and PC, you won't have trouble sharing your private data.
Don't let the name fool you. 1Password does more than just store passwords. It can autofill usernames, payment details, and personal information. And they notify you about potential data breaches.
For business operations, 1Password has a dedicated support team that will integrate its security tools into your existing workflow.
1Password saves everyone time. And we all know that time saved equals money saved. Your accounting department will thank you.
Don't just listen to us. 1Password was named Wirecutter's best password manager, and companies like Salesforce and IBM trust 1Password to secure their most sensitive information, so you can too.
Right now, our listeners get a free 2-week trial at 1Password.com/MFM.
That's 2 free weeks at 1, as in the number 1, password.com/MFM.
1Password.com/MFM.
Goodbye.
There's something about the sound of an old-timey cash register that really takes me back.
I know. It sounds like someone is about to hand me an ice cream cone, but it also sounds like we just sold some merch.
That's right. And if you're a Shopify user like us, you know that this sound means you just made a sale.
Shopify has helped millions of businesses sell their products online, but did you know they also offer the same support for brick and mortar stores?
From accepting payments to managing inventory, they have everything you need to sell in person. So give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify.
Shopify POS tracks sales across all your locations. That way, you'll always know what you have in stock and where.
They also provide reliable tech that fits your unique retail needs, like turning a tablet into a credit card reader.
And if you're looking to reach new customers, check out Shopify's marketing tools. They're easy to use, and they integrate with all social media platforms.
With Shopify, we have a powerful partner for managing our sales. And if you're a business owner, you can too.
Do retail right with Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period today at shopify.com/murder. And here's the important note, that promo code is all lowercase.
So go to shopify.com/murder and take your retail business to the next level.
That's shopify.com/murder. Again, don't forget, the code is all lowercase.
Goodbye.
So this, interestingly enough, I got this murder from one of my last packs of true crime baseball cards that Steven gave us for Christmas last year.
I keep forgetting to look at those.
Here's what I'm doing. So my new thing, because it's spring, is I just keep cleaning out drawers in my house. Ooh. Or like containers.
That's awesome.
Thank you. It feels good. I've also been wiping down walls, which is a really weird hypnotic thing to do.
Like with the magic eraser?
Yes.
Oh my God, I'm obsessed with those.
Exactly that, because I didn't realize I had done... look around in my house that much.
Yeah.
But there are walls.
You quoted, look around, like open my eyeballs. You're like, don't put your glasses on just when like, you go in your
be
house.
Be in my own home in any real present way.
I get it.
Because I have two dogs and one is a short to the ground dog, I didn't see that there are many walls in my house that look like the end of the Blair Witch, where there's just a bunch of child hands, like dirty fingerprints that look like people are trying to climb in or out of the house.
Because he jumps up?
Yeah, like they jump. And also the paint on the wall is old and it's really powdery and porous instead of the opposite.
I have that too, and it feels like chalk.
Yes.
I need semi-gloss or I will lose my mind.
Because with this other shit, you walk by and say the word dirt and there's a smudge on your wall. It is maddening. So anyway, I realized how much I got used to it because I was like, that looks like a crime scene. Like it looks weird.
Yeah.
Like somebody tiny tried to pull their way along the wall, but it's just Frank, like running out of one room and curbing and like his little feet go up on the wall to get
clonking into the wall.
Why am I talking about? Oh, because so, so I clean. So in on top of those things.
Okay.
Just me and my free time.
Wow.
Also cleaning out some drawers, found two more packets of the true crime, which I thought I was done with all of them. So I got super excited, opened one up, found this murder, had never heard of, I think I'd heard of it, but just like didn't really know any details or any specifics.
Can we really quickly, and I just thought of this, is that where you got the Papin sisters that from like two episodes ago? Because no. I want to talk about the gift we got that the girl gave us at one of the live shows.
Oh, that's a good idea. Should we just do it now?
Yeah. Okay. You guys remember the Papin sisters? They clawed the eyeballs out of their fucking mistresses. And this girl brought us a little packet and there was a little necklace in it that said, they're not marbles.
Yes.
And there was a little locket that had the Papin sisters photograph in. And then there was like a handmade, like clay eyeball.
Yes.
And it was just like the most well thought out gift, I think.
Like these three little almost charms in a box
that one would get if you didn't know.
And then we like opening it up and looking at them. Did we each get one or is that we had one and it's going up into the podcast booth?
No, we each got one.
Okay. I can't believe that. So she made two eyes, two charm, two lockets,
and I don't think I knew how to express to her like how in awe I was of it. And she acted like, oh, you know, stupid. And it's like, no,
we were like, this is amazing. Yeah. We never get to do that because we kind of feel that way.
About
I think people see us saying it a lot, but it really is true when somebody is like, here's this thing I know you really like.
Yeah.
And
even
that was
like, I didn't make it.
It's
unbelievable.
It's amazing. And it's just a really good little eyeball too. That's sitting there.
It is a good eyeball. All right.
Crazy.
Sorry.
No. So no problem. It's weird that you asked that though, because the Papin sisters were in this deck.
Oh my God.
Yes.
What are the chances?
I should have done it. I almost sent you a picture when I opened it and they were like the third people in. I should have taken the picture and sent it on our constant text thread that me, Steven, and Georgia are just never not on now.
Yeah,
that's our life.
It's photos. It's fucking quotes.
It's Steven going, they've asked you 7 times. You have to answer.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's our life. Yep. Anyhow. So I found this here. And then in my research, it exploded and flowered out into something else, which I just am kind of amazed by.
Okay.
Okay. So here's how we start. It's the Axeman of New Orleans.
Ugh.
You know that one?
No.
Okay. So he was a serial killer who struck in the city of New Orleans from May 1918 through October of 1919. He attacked, obviously, using an axe that he found in the home. He didn't bring anything
each
with
him. Each time he searched for... Okay, tell me.
Yes. So it's the turn of the century, so a lot of people have axes laying around the outside of their house. Yeah. And a lot of the places where he attacked... and here he sometimes did it with a straight razor, but mostly with an axe.
Oh, which one is worse?
Straight razor. Axe. Straight razors fast. Yeah, I don't think you'd even feel it. I think you'd be like, why is my neck cold in this one tiny place? That's
what I don't want.
You
I want
know.
I want to be clonked over the head and fucking out.
Okay. Then you want an axe.
Oh, I guess. Yeah. Which
then
is
we're
worse.
We're going to put you in an axe.
Yeah. Jesus Christ. Okay.
I think that's what it is, because straight razor, you would, but you'd bleed out so fast because it's just across the neck.
I don't know if you would.
I mean, you definitely have time to look around panicked.
Don't want that. So the what's worse to me is a straight razor.
Okay.
And what's worse to you is
an axe. Just, you want to be out.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. So here's what happened. This guy would use the tools that he found in the home. He would kill the whole family, and he would hang out either before or after. They couldn't figure out before or after, oftentimes eating.
So they could have invited him in.
Could have. Usually the home is found locked when the police get there.
Oh my God.
And it's never robbed, even though most of the time the people have valuables out very openly, mm-hmm. whatever. Never, ever any sign of robbery. And oftentimes mirrors and faces are covered with fabric.
Creepy.
Yes. Okay. So it starts on May 22nd, 1918. So a grocer named Joseph Maggio was sleeping alongside his wife, Catherine, at their home on the corner of Upper Line and Magnolia Streets, for people that live in New Orleans. So a guy breaks into their house. He cuts their throats with a straight razor. And upon leaving, he bashes their heads in with an axe.
Oh, man.
So he found both in this
house. So you don't even need to choose.
That's right. Like, here's where I take that off your plate.
I don't even need to ask you that
Don't
question.
Even worry about it Steven, anymore.
Cut it's that fine. Out.
Because you are going to feel both quickly and then, but it's over anyway.
Yeah.
Catherine's throat was cut so deep that her head was nearly severed.
Oh, I hate that.
That's bad. Okay. And see, that's the thing is like in those mafia movies and stuff, when the guys get leaned back and get at the barber to get shaved.
Yes.
And the barber has the straight razor.
Yeah.
And oft times.
Yep.
If it's a movie, they'll cut their throat for totally. Whatever reason. But that like bond of trust that you would have with that man, because they're doing that to you.
But I feel like a lot of times in movies I've seen the guy would lean back to get shaved, close his eyes, and then the mafia guy would trade the places with the barber. So the barber didn't do it. He was just a neighborhood dude.
Yeah, but he stepped out of his place. He didn't retain his duty as the barber to fight and defend your life.
He has a family to worry about.
He took the oath. Okay. So
for a moment I was like, what?
Oh fuck. That's yeah. right, the barber's oath.
The barber's oath. I mean, there's probably
okay. In the apartment, the police found the bloody clothes of the murderer. So he changed into a clean set of clothes before he left, which is also reflects back to him just chilling out, like this committing these terrible murders and then just hanging out.
Really?
So investigators didn't do a complete search of the premises after the bodies were removed. So later on, that bloody razor was found on a neighbor's lawn. And that razor that was used to kill the couple belonged to Andrew Maggio, who's the brother of Joseph, the grocer who was murdered in his bed. Mm-hmm. And Andrew owned a barber shop.
They were brothers. Weird.
They were brothers, okay. Yeah. And those brothers are the people that found Joseph and his wife, Catherine, because they were like staying at home and not answering the phone or whatever, doing what they were supposed to be doing. And the three brothers went over there and found their bodies.
Fuck.
His employee, Andrew's employee, Esteban Torres, told the police that Maggio had removed the razor from his shop 2 days prior to the murder, explaining that he wanted to have a nick honed from the blade. So the razor was out of the barber shop and had gotten to get fixed somewhere. So it's just it's in the mix now, I guess, is the point of that. Maggio, who lived in the adjoining apartment to his brother's residence, discovered the gruesome scene 2 hours after the attacks occurred. And he blamed his failure to hear any noise related to the attacks in the early morning hours on his being drunk, because he had returned home the night before from a celebration due to his departure to join the Navy. Police, however, were surprised that he failed to hear the intruder, as he did make a forced entry into the home. So then Andrew Maggio, the brother of Joseph, became the police chief's prime suspect. But then he was released when investigators were convinced that his alibi held up. He also told police that there was an unknown man seen lurking near the residence prior to the murders.
Yeah, right.
So that was May 22nd. About a month later, on June 27th, in the early morning hours, Louise Bezumer and his... Louis Bessume, let's say that, because they're all French back there in New Orleans.
Yeah.
Louis Bessume and his mistress, Harriet Lowe, were attacked in the quarters at the back of his grocery store. This is grocer number two. Bessume was struck in the with a hatchet above his right temple, which resulted in a possible skull fracture. And Harriet was hacked over the left ear and found unconscious when the police arrived. They were discovered shortly after 7 a.m. in the morning by John Zanka, who was the bakery truck driver. And he came to the grocery to make a delivery. And then he found both Louis Bessime and his mistress, Harriet Lowe, in a puddle of their own blood. And the axe, which had belonged to Bessime, was found in the bathroom of the apartment. So they lived, and they he explained to the police that he'd been sleeping. He was bashed with a hatchet. And then police arrest Louis Obakan, who was a 41-year-old African-American man who had been employed in Bessime's store weeks before the attacks. But there was no evidence that proved that the man was guilty or even related to this, but the police arrested him nonetheless, stating that he had offered conflicting accounts of where he was the night of the murder. The morning of the murder. So then shortly after that, Harriet Lowe stated that she remembered having been attacked by a light-skinned black man. But her statement was discounted by the police because of her head injury and because she was the mistress. She wasn't an upstanding wife.
Oh, man.
And robbery was said to be the explanation and what Obakan's motive was, except for nothing was removed from the Bessime's home.
Right.
So essentially what ends up happening is, oh no.
Can that be heard?
Did you hear it?
I think it'll be like the ghost train, just kind of faintly.
There's a child screeching.
That was like a bone chilling scream, though.
Should I throw something off the balcony at them? Those little fuckers.
Mrs. Harriet Lowe then starts to become like sensationalized in the newspaper. She can't stop talking to the press. She's criticizing the police. And then at one point,
and this is the mistress.
This is the mistress.
Who got clonked in the head.
And they keep making a story about it because he basically got caught with his mistress and was still married. And
this is the story.
Not the murder.
A fucking murderer.
Well, it was all just constantly in the paper.
Right.
The Times-Picayune sensationalized Lowe in her outspoken nature upon discovering that she was not the wife of Bessime, but a mistress. A charity hospital source discovered the scandal when Bessime asked to be directed to the room of Mrs. Harriet Lowe and was inevitably denied access, as no woman by that name was a patient. Mm-mm. So it's like he's not a relative. He can't visit her. Then his legal wife arrived from Cincinnati in... a couple days after the discovery, and then which further inflamed the ongoing drama.
And she was pissed as fuck.
And she was like, I'll kill both y'all. 2 days later, you just take that out, please. 2 days later, Bessime was released. And the two lead investigators get demoted for unacceptable police work.
Yes.
But then Bessime is arrested in August 1918 as Harriet Lowe, who is dying in a charity hospital after a failed heart surgery, states that it was Louis who attacked her with the hatchet.
Louis being the brother.
No. Louis Bessime is the guy that also got attacked.
Okay.
She basically is like, he did it. Okay. Whatever.
All right.
But he was acquitted after 10 minutes. There was no proof. And it was, they knew she was just kind of this lunatic.
That, yeah.
Whatever. Yeah. At least that's the story that I got. Okay. So then August 5th, 1918, a 28-year-old woman named Mrs. Schneider, who was 8 months pregnant, was attacked in the early evening of her hours on her house in Elmira Street, she awoke to find a dark figure standing over her and was bashed in the face repeatedly. Her scalp was cut open. Her face was completely covered in blood.
Oh my God.
She was discovered after midnight by her husband, who had been returning from work. And she was still alive.
Oh my
and
God.
She claimed that she remembered nothing of the attack. She gave birth to a healthy baby girl 2 days after the incident.
Wow.
Which is crazy.
Jesus.
Nothing had been stolen from the home, even though there was cash left out. The windows and doors were not forced open. And they put together that she was attacked with a lamp on a bedside table.
Don't fucking attack pregnant people.
I mean,
don't attack anyone, but like...
This guy really wants to attack everyone.
Yeah.
As you will come to find out.
Okay.
So, all right. So then 5 days later, on August 10th, Joseph Romano, who's an elderly man living with his two nieces, The two nieces hear him make a noise in his room in their house that they live in together, and they go in and discover that their uncle had taken a serious blow to the head. He has so two huge cuts in his head, and they see the guy fleeing the scene as they walk in, but they can't tell if he is thin or fat, if he is dark skinned or light skinned. They can't really say anything for sure. They both have conflicting views. And even though this old man was seriously injured, he could walk to the ambulance, but he still died 2 days later.
Aww.
Because of the severe head trauma.
Aww.
Nothing was stolen. They found a bloody axe in the backyard, and they discovered that a panel had been chiseled out of the back door.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how he was getting into these houses. He was like, just like going up to the back door and like basically just making a little,
like
prying it open, essentially like chiseling a spot open and then going in and unlocking it.
I think someone would hear that.
Yeah, but they're all asleep.
Like the way you whispered that.
Tip, 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 tap, tip, tap,
but
tap.
I still think you would have heard that.
I mean, you would hope that you
right.
would. These guys didn't. So then at this point, a man named John D'Antonio, who was a retired Italian detective, started making public statements in which he hypothesized about this man who had committed these Axeman murders. And he described the potential killer as an individual of dual personalities who killed without motive. And he said that it could very likely be a normal law-abiding citizen who was often overcome by an overwhelming desire to kill. And he later went on to describe the killer as a real Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Yeah, I just can't even. Yeah.
Okay. So then on March 10th, 1919, so about 6 months later, 8 months later, Charles Cortmiglia, an immigrant who lived with his wife and baby on the corner of Jefferson and Second Street in Gretna, Louisiana, which is a suburb of New Orleans. There's screams coming from their house. And so grocer Orlando Giordano rushes across the street to investigate. And he sees that Charles Cortmiglia, his wife Rosie, and their infant daughter had all been attacked by the unknown intruder. Rosie stood in the doorway with a head wound, clutching her deceased daughter.
No.
So this axe-wielding motherfucker just goes in and kills everybody, no matter their age. I guess it sounds like you have to be a grocer of some kind that qualifies you, or Italian. But just kills everybody in the in the apartment or in the
room.
What
the fuck?
It's super crazy. Okay. And again, nothing. No, they weren't robbed.
It ain't about that.
Yeah.
Bro.
Nothing stolen. The back door was chiseled. The bloody axe was found on the back porch. He like does it and then just would leave it and walk away.
Oh my God. I can't wait to find out who this motherfucker is.
Okay. So then the police are sent a letter, or a letter gets published in the newspaper. I don't know the order of how it got sent, but this is what it said. It said it was postmarked from hell, March 13th, 1919. It reads, "Esteemed mortal, they have never caught me and they never will. They have never seen me, for I am invisible, even as the ether that surrounds your earth. I am not a human being, but a spirit and a demon from the hottest hell. I am what you Orleanians and your foolish policemen call the Axeman." When I see fit, I shall come and claim other victims. I alone know whom they shall be. I shall leave no clue except my bloody axe, besmeared with blood and brains of he whom I have sent below to keep me company. If you wish, you may tell the police to be careful not to rile me. Of course, I am a reasonable spirit. I take no offense at the way they have conducted their investigations in the past. In fact, they have been so utterly stupid as to not only amuse me, but his satanic majesty, Francis Joseph. But tell them to beware. Let them not try to discover what I am, for it were better that they were never born than to incur the wrath of the Axeman. I don't think there's any need of such warning, for I feel the police will always dodge me as they have in the past. They are wise and know how to keep all away from harm. Undoubtedly, you Orleanians think of me as the most horrible murderer, which I am, but I could be much worse if I wanted to. If I wished, I could pay a visit to your city every night. At will, I could slay thousands of your best citizens, for I am in close relationship with the Angel of Death. Now, to be exact, at 12:15 earthly time on next Tuesday night, I'm going to pass over New Orleans. In my infinite mercy, I'm going to make a little proposition to you people. Here it is. I'm very fond of jazz music, and I swear by all the devils in the nether regions that every person shall be spared in whom a jazz band is in full swing at the time I have just mentioned. If everyone has a jazz band going, well then, so much the better for you people. One thing is certain, and that is that some of your people who do not jazz it on Tuesday
what
night,
the fuck?
If there be any, will get the axe. Well, as I am cold and crave the warmth of my native Tartarus, and it is about time I leave your earthly home, I will cease my discourse, hoping thou will publish this, that it may go well with thee. I have been, am, and will be the worst spirit that ever existed, either in fact or realm of fancy, the Axeman.
Jesus, he's chatty.
And
my
also,
God.
So it reminds me of Richard Ramirez's big speech in court, where he's just like, I am the, where it's that thing of like, you know, he is not just a man anymore. He's like become a god and all that kind of psychotic stuff.
Yes, very psychotic.
But also very biblical.
Oh, yeah. But also, and the whole thing, the whole time I was like, well, the more you talk, the more you write and the more information you give, you're just giving away and you're more clues. So shut the fuck up.
Yeah. Yeah.
What
but doesn't it seem like he has a bit of a like, because isn't that essentially the story of Passover?
Oh yeah, you'll pass over the house if they have jazz music playing. That's exactly it.
Isn't that why you guys have so much fun on Passover?
We have the best time. No, I was like, this is written by a record label exec who's like, wants his jazz music to be playing.
Playing? People who do not jazz it on Tuesday night.
Wow. That's our new like Tuesday night club at whatever bar.
We gotta jazz it.
Jazz it.
And nobody likes jazz, so everyone's like a little unhappy.
Yeah, but it's like, well, we'll kill you if you don't come.
We just gotta do it. Just get through these next 15 minutes. Well, apparently so. Everyone jazzed it on that Tuesday night and no one was killed.
Shut up.
Yeah, it actually worked. Excuse me. But then, of course, as it always does.
It always but thens.
There's so many but thens. August 10th, Steve Boca, a grocer, is attacked in his bedroom as he sleeps.
Wait, is he really purposely getting grocers?
Well, yes, because they all are.
Man, what a bummer.
It's so specific, but it's, they say grocer here, but I also think it means people who keep stores. So it's okay. Like, sometimes it's a guy that has, like a grocery store and a bar
or
type
of
place.
Or pharmacy or some kind of thing.
Yeah. Okay. It doesn't necessarily mean like the big thing of lettuce that's on the sidewalk per se.
A green grocer, they used to call them.
Right. The green grocer. But it is people that own stores.
Weird.
Super fucking weird. Okay. So then, He wakes in the night, finds a dark figure looming over him. When he regains consciousness, he runs into the street, finds that his head has been cracked open.
What if you found that? See what I found? I found my head to be cracked open.
You know what? I need help here.
Oh,
so he goes
no.
to his neighbor's house, collapses. Then the neighbor calls the police. Nothing's taken from the home. A panel on the back door had been chiseled away. Boca recovered from his injuries, but he had, again, no memory. And that's every single person that survives knows nothing about what happened.
Yeah.
Head injuries. September 13th, it happens again. Sarah Lawman was attacked on the night of September 13th. Her neighbors came to check on her because she lived alone. And they hadn't seen her in a while. They broke into her house when she didn't answer and discovered the 19-year-old lying unconscious on her bed, suffering from a severe head injury, missing several teeth.
Ooh, this guy goes straight for the fucking...
Right to the face.
And noggin.
They say that all of the injuries were neck, head, and only a couple had on their defensive wounds on their arms. Most of them, he would just get in there and chop very precisely.
Weird.
And sometimes he would obliterate the face of the man. And sometimes he would rape the wife. All right.
Oh.
But here, so bloody axes discovered on the front lawn. She recovered from her injuries. Couldn't remember anything.
Yeah.
October 27th, Mike Pepitone is attacked.
Did you ask Eddie Pepitone if
I put in a call. He won't talk to me. That would be amazing.
I've never heard that last name before.
I know.
Anywhere.
I know. So he sees... His wife is awakened by a noise and walks into the bedroom, walks to the bedroom door just as a large axe wielding man is fleeing the scene.
Oh my God.
Mike had been struck in the head, was covered in his own blood. Blood spatter covered the majority of the room. But Mrs. Pepitone is unable to explain any of the killers, describe the killer in any way. I did read something that said Mrs. Pepitone went on to shoot the man she believed was standing there. So this is a different story than the end of this one, which is basically she didn't know and she had nothing to explain to say to the cops. There's another story that said Mrs. Pepitone knew who it was, and after her husband like a couple weeks after the murder, she shot the man in the street and then the murder stopped happening. That's right. You know, who knows?
Yeah.
And then she herself was convicted of murder and was in jail for 10 years.
What the shit?
Who knows about any of that? So, okay. So that's that's the full realm of the Axeman of New Orleans murders.
Okay.
But then I watched a documentary on the YouTube that was actually very good, although it seemed very like kind of homemade, self-produced. The guy that was narrating it, I don't think his British accent was his original accent of life. It had a little bit of this feel to it.
It was, what's the word when you try too hard?
You're an actor?
Yep.
It was had a real actor feel.
Effect.
Affected?
Affected.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's really good. Good information. I could be totally wrong about the accent.
Also, it doesn't mean it's not real. Good.
That's right. But here's the thing. Every once in a while, it's like a 50-minute documentary. And every once in a while, when he's talking about a different fact, there'll just be like a sound effect of screaming. So it's just like almost like haunted house style. Like
our podcast is with the children screaming outside.
I guess it is effective. So it's not, you know,
affected and effective.
It's affecting. It's affected. Okay. This documentary basically theorizes that the Axeman of New Orleans actually was killing for long before the New Orleans attacks and after. And so they just start saying, because from 1879 to 1922 in America, there were lots and lots of axe murderers where a guy broke into the house by chiseling the back door middle of the night, killing an entire family, not robbing them, using their own axe to do it with, eating before or after, hanging out in the house. Usually a farmer, usually it's like a whole family and it's kind of out in the middle of nowhere where it takes a couple days.
Rural?
Brutal as fuck.
No, rural.
Rural. Oh, rural.
Rural, brutal rural.
The brutal rural
murders. Yeah.
Okay, so, and this is just, so the guy's just basically saying this is so long ago and this is like pre any of the like police procedural knowledge that we have now.
Yep.
There also could be more and people just haven't connected the fact. But okay. So in 1879, an elderly couple, this is somewhere in Georgia. It's a rainy night. They're attacked, almost decapitated. And when the police investigate the crime scene, they find that someone had been hiding in an upstairs room for a minimum of 2 days because there was smoke, cigarettes, and human feces in there. So someone had snuck into their house, hung out, and then waited.
Fuck, man.
For the nighttime.
That's why I always want to live in a small house. I don't want there to be rooms that just don't get looked into.
Yeah, no attics.
Uh-uh.
No. You could also like release, you know, I don't know, some kind of super dangerous animal every night just to take a run around the house.
Cool. Yeah.
I was going to say cobra, but that'd be too scary.
How about a cross-eyed Siamese cat?
Yeah, he's very intimidating. it was their axe. The axe was left in the fireplace. There was no robbery, even though there was a stash of silver on like the kitchen counter. Mm-hmm. 5 years later, in 1884 in Austin, Texas, a woman named Molly Smith is attacked in her bed with an axe, and then the attacker pulls her outside into the backyard, rapes her, and murders her outside.
Weird.
Several months later, Eliza Shelley is also murdered with an axe. Her head is split open. And on that one, the police noted that none of the dogs in the neighborhood barked.
Mm-hmm.
And there were dogs that were tied up right next door. And they didn't bark or have a reaction of any kind the entire night. So it was a silent night on both of those nights.
Weird.
And that freaked the police out really bad because it's like usually you just get a little something. People
that
like, oh,
always that note always freaks me out because it's clearly someone that the dogs know.
Yes. It's and that's been doing their groundwork.
Yeah.
To like make sure the dogs are like, he's going to throw them food or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's so 4 more people are killed in this same way, slaughtered in their beds with their own axe. No robbery. The weapons left in the house until Christmas Eve of 1885, a couple is attacked and the bloodhound couldn't get a scent. Like they gave the bloodhound a thing to smell that was from the axe left behind and they couldn't get a scent. And that's they were weird. Like the best bloodhounds around or whatever. So again, it was that thing where the cops were like, maybe this is a demon, like or whatever.
Yeah.
Or I guess this was before. So they would be like, huh, maybe some demon's going to write us a letter in 15 years.
Right.
Also here in like a couple other places, they found bear footprints. In the blood.
Ooh.
Uh-huh.
Weird.
In 1897, this is 12 years later now, up in Paradise Ridge, Tennessee, the Ade family, a neighbor sees the Ade family farmhouse on fire. And so he goes over to see what's happening. And not only is their house on fire, but their barn and a couple of other buildings on their ranch. And when they put the fire out, they find the entire family has been murdered with an axe. The parents... their daughter who was in her 20s, the son who was 13, and a neighbor girl who was 10.
I don't think that's him.
What's that?
I don't think it's him. That one.
The killer ate either before or after the killing. He hung out in the house. And the neighbor girl, they think the way they traced it, she got away and he caught her, killed her, and threw her back into the burning house.
Oh my God.
14 years after that, I cannot see what that says. Something Oregon near Portland. Mm-hmm. It's near Portland.
Okay.
The Hill family is murdered in their house. The children are murdered in their beds. It's everything is exactly the same. So it's just basically they've pulled all these crimes where like an entire family, no robbery, axe, head wounds, all of it. A month after that, in Rainier, Washington, Archie Cobble and his wife are murdered in their bed with an axe.
Oh my God.
In 1911 in Colorado Springs, a man walks into the home of Alice Bunchen, I think it says, and murdered her and her 6-year-old daughter and her 3-year-old son. And when her sister went to visit, she found the bodies. She ran outside and screamed for help. And everybody in the neighborhood came running except the family that lived next door, the Wayne family.
Mm-mm.
And so they went to check on them. And the wife, husband, and 1-year-old baby had all been slaughtered in their beds.
Oh, no.
And then the beds were made up after them, like the killer had killed them and then tucked them back into bed.
Oh, that's horrifying.
so it looked like they were sleeping. Both of those cases, no robbery. Both houses were locked from the inside. 13 days after that, in Monmouth, Illinois, the First Presbyterian Church is not open for the service on Sunday, so everybody calls the caretaker, who doesn't answer. They go to the caretaker's house, and he... Sorry, Mr. Danson is the caretaker. He, his wife, and their teen daughter are murdered in their beds. There's no robbery. 2 weeks later, in Ellsworth, Kansas, the Sherman family hasn't been seen for a while. A neighbor that's worried about them because they weren't answering their phone goes to visit. All five of the Shermans have been murdered with an axe in their house. The police found the axe, and the phone was wrapped with a piece of someone's clothing, was wrapped around the phone. And the police later realized that it was probably because the neighbor was calling over and over, and so he wrapped that so he wouldn't have to hear the phone
to
ring.
Silence it.
Yeah.
Creepy.
Yes. 2 weeks later, in Mount Pleasant, Iowa, Mr. J.B. Jordan leaves for work. He doesn't lock the kitchen door. Their eldest son is upstairs. He hears his mother scream. He runs downstairs and finds that she's been attacked in her bed with an axe. She has an injury to her head, but she survives, but remembers nothing. They're not robbed, and nobody sees anything. Mm-hmm. 8 months later, in Paola, Kansas, a young couple in their early 20s, the Hudsons, hadn't been seen. Neighbors checked. They're murdered in their bed. And that night, a family in the same town wakes to the sound of a lamp crashing to the floor. And the father goes downstairs to see what it is, and he sees a man leaving their house.
Oh, my God.
Less than a week later, and I think I'm pronouncing this right, in Valeska, Iowa, it's the Valeska axe murders. Remember, there was somebody that brought us a bag of stuff from the Valeska.
Yes.
I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. Do you know, Steven? Valeska.
Okay.
So this is one of the most famous axe murder cases, but I didn't realize that the theory is basically this is one guy, because the Valeska axe murder house. So it's the Moore family.
Was it like the murders from, the Truman Capote?
Similar.
Okay.
Yeah. Where they just killed that family for no reason.
Right.
But this is, it's their whole family. They'd gotten back from church, and then nobody saw them for days. But they did see smoke coming out of the chimney, but they just didn't see them out on their farm doing
right.
their chores.
Right.
So the neighbors were just like, that's weird. So after 3 days, they go check. The entire family has been murdered with axes in their beds, plus two little girls who were there for a sleepover that were neighbor girls. So 8 people were murdered in this house with axes. And they found that the man, had been hiding. Every mirror in the house was covered with a piece of clothing.
Ooh.
Nothing had been stolen. The killer definitely spent at least 2 days there. Lots of had made food, left a bunch of stuff out. And they found proof again that he had waited in the attic for 2 days until nighttime so he could come out and surprise them and murder them. And then in 1914, in Blue Island, Illinois, a family is found, this is 2 years later, a family is found murdered in their bed. And then that brings us up to then 1918 in New Orleans. And then 4 years later in Germany. So then in the 1919 murder at Christmas Eve was the last one.
Right.
The Pepitones.
Where the chick shot at him.
Right.
Supposedly.
Shot and killed somebody and then the murders ended.
Right.
But in Germany, there was a farmer who saw a set of footprints.
This story.
In the snow leading to his house, but not away.
This is the craziest story.
He searches his whole house, top to bottom, doesn't find anything. Goes to bed that night, either that night or the next night, and then he's murdered. He and his family are murdered, and it's the exact same thing.
And that guy hides in their house, I think, right?
Yes. He's hidden in their house, but they couldn't find where. All of the bodies in this were covered with sheets, or some of them are out in the barn, so they were covered in piles of hay. he stayed through the weekend and there was no robbery. So it was exactly the same MO as all of these other ones. So basically, so it's just saying it could be this German immigrant, because on and the Valeska axe murder house, there was a note written in German under the table that was left behind. And there was another one of the women that survived in the earlier ones heard him speaking in German. So there was a theory that he was a German immigrant who kind of did this for, you know, what it seems like over 20, maybe 30 years, then takes a boat back to Germany. He's going to chill out. And then 4 years later, he can't wait anymore. And he does it again.
Or has been doing it. And they just never got.
Yes.
I just wonder if in town there was anyone who had like been away, if they had known to ask that.
You mean in Germany?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's super crazy. It's so extreme. So then this is the best part, but I don't get how it connects. It connects in this documentary perfectly because the guy is going like this or whatever.
And he's like dee doo dee doo
in 1994, but it's super awesome anyway, even if it's not real. But so basically a guy they have an old, Navy ship that they're basically parting out because it's like done for, it's retired or whatever they call that.
Yeah.
And so this guy, it was his job to go through this Navy ship before they take it all apart and take pictures and record and basically do a report on what the status of the ship was and give inventory so they know what should be saved.
Creepy to begin with. Can you imagine being alone on a fucking Navy ship?
Why alone? And also there was some extra things where I was like, we're gilding the lily here, where it was like,
right.
And because he, you know, the whole ship was off, so he had a flashlight, then he would turn the flashlight off.
And it was said that he'd be haunted.
Well, I mean, yeah, his camera. Yeah. But even still, when he turned all the pictures in and it was hundreds and hundreds of pictures, he got a frantic call back from like headquarters or whatever. And they were like, who's the old man with the axe in that picture?
Oh my God.
So then they send him the picture.
Oh my God. Are you going to show me?
Yeah. Right.
Shut the fuck up. It's real. Oh my God. I'm going to cry. Let me see here.
Show Steven.
I dropped the phone. That is no. I'm gonna cry.
Yeah. Look,
oh my God,
real
Steven,
that is.
Don't
it's
look.
Not like,
that's the creepiest, scariest thing I've ever seen in my life.
I'm chills. Down
chills.
My back.
Right.
What can people? Shit. What do people like? Look up. Axeman Navy ship.
That's exactly what I put in.
Oh my God.
Old man axe. Oh, and look.
I don't want.
There's
it.
A close up.
I don't want it. Give it to me.
For everybody else, we'll post this, but it's basically,
I just fucked up.
You know, when you see like a ghost investigator show and they do a thing where they'll circle something in a picture and you're like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, I've seen
this. This is clearly a man on this ship with an axe in his hand.
The close up is less convincing to me, where honestly, like, it looks like the guy's wearing like a mask of like that commercial with the like an old man mask, but the
Six Flags guy that dances around,
that guy, but far away, and it's definitely an axe, but
it's
far away, and like, yeah, that's, it looks like something you wouldn't notice until you saw the photo, kind of a thing.
Well, also, I love the idea. Is it too close? I love the idea of this old guy is so good at like evading the police and getting away with stuff that he knows to like, oh, I'm just going to go live on this old ship that they haven't parted out yet.
Totally.
Like that idea does link together well for me. And then they, at the end of this documentary, I highly recommend. And again, you just go put in the Axeman of New Orleans and it'll come up. It's the only one that's like 50 minutes long. Mm-hmm. But they start listing all of the other unrelated, unsolved, but full family axe murders where there was no robbery and like basically all of those qualifiers that I kept repeating.
Yeah.
And there were probably like 8 of them additionally that were just in random cities. And what I would love to do, and I'm sure somebody has, because they said somewhere it said they were all near railroad tracks. So this guy could have just been
hobo
style.
Oh my God.
hopping on a train and just going, because he really does clearly is just a drifter that's going from place to place. And what a perfect way to be a murderer. Just you do it, jump on a train. You were never there.
I'm wondering if there's some, like, you know, German fairy tale that has to do with, like, all the weird shit that was in that letter.
Yeah.
You know, like, he mentioned specific places that I'd never heard of, like, in regards to hell. So right. I wonder if, like, there's some connection there.
Yeah, I wonder if they've done any kind of, like, the studying, Jack the Ripper style studying yeah. about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had no idea it was this, like, I found that to be so fascinating because it is one of those things, like, the Valeska axe murder house and that whole, it's so crazy that it is a standalone murder story.
Yeah.
But it could possibly be connected to this other, like, just a crazy serial killer that if it is this guy, he killed 61 people of the cases they know yeah. about.
As a standalone murder, it's like, well, it's someone they knew or that had a beef with someone or that, you know, they were partners with in business and so they wanted it to themselves. But if it's not, then that's even, then that makes almost more sense.
Yeah. It's just the house by the railroad tracks where he felt like jumping off, sure. like the first place.
Needed food, clothes.
Well, that's kind of interesting.
Terrifying.
I'm sure there's plenty more other people know.
That photo is fucking horrifying.
Get ready to enjoy it.
All right.
People of New Orleans. Listening.
Oh. People of New Orleans. Okay.
Georgia, have you ever been blown away by the most simple dish at a restaurant? Like perfectly scrambled eggs?
Oh my God, yes, Karen. And then all I want to do is make that dish at home and eat it every day.
Well, you probably could, as long as you have the chef's secret ingredient, Made In cookware.
Made In was created to bring restaurant quality performance kitchenware to home chefs around the world.
For years, they've built their business by supplying restaurants and top chefs with high-end cookware. Some of Tom Colicchio's most treasured dishes at his restaurant Kraft are made in Made In.
Whether you're cooking for professional critics or just the critics you live with, your meals will benefit from the quality of Made In products.
Like their carbon steel cookware, it combines the best of both cast iron and stainless steel clad, so it's rugged enough for grills or an open flame. It's the MVP of summer cookouts and cook-ins. What I really love about Made In cookware is that it actually makes something like having a Memorial Day barbecue much more convenient because you can keep everything on the grill. If you need to throw, say, a pan of garlic up on the top while you're grilling your steaks on the bottom, it's strong enough, durable enough to do that.
If you want to take your cooking to the next level, remember what so many great dishes have in common. They're all Made In, Made In.
Save up to 25% this Memorial Day from May 18th through May 27th when you visit madeincookware.com.
That's madeincookware.com. Goodbye.
We're talking about lights being depressing. Randomly. We had a pause.
Yeah. We have to have a human break.
And I made Steven turn the kitchen lights on because it's dusk, which depresses the shit out of me.
Yeah, I was saying that you know what gets me is I have a friend who has that same thing where he has a whole system of he has to go around that house and turn everything on like when the sun is beginning to go down.
Me too.
It's not even like when it's down. I have the opposite thing of when I get up in the morning, if there's a lamp on, it's that thing of why are we even doing this feeling where it's like no one turned the lights off last night or like no one's minding the shop feeling that makes me like really mad.
It never got shut down.
Yes.
I feel the same way about when I wake up and come out and the house is messy.
Yep.
What's funny about that, I was talking about that, is when therapy the other day, we kind of pieced it together that might be why between like 3 o'clock and 7 o'clock, I always want to go have a drink and like have a happy hour, like pick Vince up from work and we go have a drink. And it's like, I want to make this part a celebration but then after that, I'm fine.
Can I just put out a suggestion that you've probably already talked about?
Yeah.
Which is, but 3 o'clock and 7 o'clock is the, latchkey time where you're home by yourself totally. After school before anybody gets home from work.
That's exactly it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a rough time.
Yeah. It's total latchkey shit.
Yeah. That, to me, that time is like 3 to 7 is all about watching TV. I'm not interested in watching, but we won't not watch TV.
Oh, totally.
Like if there's nothing on, back in the time where there was times where there was nothing on, but we'd still just sit there and force ourselves to watch like
Muppet
Star
Babies.
Trek. Yes. It was always reruns of Star Trek, which my sister and I didn't like, but we were like, well, there's nothing else on.
This is
we
what's
have
on
to
right
watch
now.
It. And now I'm like an expert because of that. I've seen all of them 15 times.
Yeah. I've seen a fucking shit ton. Next Generation. Oh, every episode I've seen.
It seems like everything in adult life is just ways of kind of trying to give the child at that time a little bit of a bottle and like
shut the fuck up.
I mean,
well, that's why I like drinking booze
or anything. It's like everybody has a thing, but you're just kind of it's almost like you're trying to go back and be like, somebody should have been here and given you this.
Oh,
somebody should have, yeah, like, you know what I mean, somebody should have come and like rubbed your back a little bit and made you actual food. And
that's a lot of my therapy is,
yeah,
is that
same-sers.
Yeah, it's the shit that like your fucking patterns that you keep repeating until adulthood in some weird way that I'm now trying to like, you're now doing your best to fucking break.
Yeah, but it feels fraudulent.
It doesn't. It feels like everything's gonna fall
apart all the time.
Hanging by a string
all of the time. And that's why we like podcasts.
And murder. Because that's truth.
That is true.
That's fucking preaching it truth. Okay, speaking of, hey, hi, Karen. Are you ready for a family annihilator?
Yes.
Ready for William Bradford Bishop.
Ooh.
Okay.
Oh, Bill Bishop from down the street?
Billy Bish. Bill Bish. Real Bad Bish. Did I say that right?
No.
Bill Brad Bish. Okay. Anyways. On the morning of March 1st, 1976, in good old Bethesda, Maryland, William Bradford Bishop, who's a 39-year-old Yale graduate.
And oh my God, say that with more disdain in your voice.
Did I say it? Yale graduate. I didn't even do that on purpose. College. You think you're better than me?
Fucking college?
Fucking, oh.
You're not better than me because you fucking went to school with Ivy on it.
Oh, you're a Yale-y? Graduate and United States Foreign Service officer learns that he is not getting the promotion that he expected.
Red flag.
He tells his secretary he might be getting the flu and leaves work. He withdraws $400 from his bank, drives to Sears and buys a gas can and a sledgehammer.
Uh-oh.
A sledgehammer or a ball peen hammer, which you've mentioned before, and I had no idea what it was.
Sledgehammers are big, and ball peen hammers are normal hammers.
Right.
I believe.
So I think you're right. So I don't know how those could have been. Anyways, he also buys a shovel and a pitchfork. Then he heads home to his wife, mother, and three children.
Now, if you're working at that Sears, you're like, I think this guy might be starting his own hardware store.
Yeah.
Using our stuff.
Yeah.
Going so home maybe, to garden? How about... He wants to just mark his name down.
Yeah.
Something. Totally. Make a list.
Yeah.
Just
follow him home and make sure that he doesn't...
Someone do something.
Annihilate. The next day... So the next... He does all that shit. The next day, about a six-hour drive from Bethesda and about 5 miles from Columbia, North Carolina, in a wooded, swampy forest area, a forest ranger is dispatched to an area where smoke is rising from the trees. There he finds... 5 burned bodies.
Oh,
the burned bodies aren't identified for a week until a neighbor of the bishop's calls the police, worried that he hasn't seen the family in a week. When the police enter the Bradford home, they find a bloodbath with spattered blood on the floors and walls, and the children's room is covered ceiling to floor in blood.
Ugh.
And it's then that the shovel from the scene of the burning bodies is traced back to a hardware store in Bethesda, and the police make the connection.
You mean a Sears? No, sorry. Just kidding.
A Sears, Roebuck & Company at the time. So we're going to be specific.
It is actually technically Sears, Roebuck in 1976.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, yeah. All right. So police think that Bradford killed his wife, who was his high school sweetheart, Annette, first, followed by his mother, Lobella, who was returning home from walking the family's golden retriever, Leo. Ooh, spoiler alert, Leo's okay.
Oh, good. Okay.
Mom and wife so far dead.
Very much dead.
Bludgeoned.
Bad, bad, bad.
Bludgeoned as fuck. Then he kills his 3 boys. 15-year-old Brad, 10-year-old Brenton, and 5-year-old Jeffrey were killed while they slept in their beds in an upstairs bedroom. All of them bludgeoned. Here's a fucking horrifying part. The detective says that in his 12 years as an officer, it was the worst crime scene he had ever observed. Mm-hmm. And he notes that there were hammer marks on the ceiling above the top bunk bed in one of the boys' bedrooms, which told how many times and how viciously Bishop had struck his son. So in the like back and then blow, he hits the ceiling.
Yeah. Dude.
Yeah. So a massive manhunt ensues for Bishop. The family station wagon that was used to transport the bodies to be burned was found abandoned in a parking lot hundreds of miles west from where the bodies were found. And Bishop's also identified by the clerk of a sporting goods store in Jacksonville, North Carolina, using his credit card to purchase Converse shoes the same day that the bodies were found.
Was he coming to Silver Lake?
I know. I added that because I just thought it was so...
Oh, that detail. I thought you meant like we were making the same joke.
Oh, my God. No.
Yeah, that's super... But
some articles said tennis shoes, and I'm like, no, Converse. That's like a specific thing, because we all own them.
Yeah, that's right. And also, it sounds like... Because he was... did you say he was in the Navy or something before?
He was
kind of military guy? So he's trying to play a different character, right?
Sure. He's blending in.
Hippie shit. He's trying to bring his hippie shit to the West Coast.
Yeah, or be a skater. You know what I mean?
And that man turned out to be...
Yeah. Who's a skater? I can't think of anyone because I don't know. Tony Hawk.
I was going to say Peralta.
Oh.
Stacy Peralta.
Yeah.
Shit.
Damn there we it. Go. Steven.
I'm a poser.
A poser? You're not posing to be a fucking skating
camp. I'm trying to make people think I skate.
Hey, bro. Okay. Converse shoes. Same day the bodies are found. And it's also said that he had the dog on a leash with him. So he didn't. And when I first read this whole article, it was that the dog was killed too. And I'm like, people are not going to fucking like that.
Right.
But the dog is on a leash and he seems to be okay. Anyways, after that, what are you thinking?
Do you think people do that because it's the animal is the most innocent in the almost like the innocence food pyramid of like, it can't talk, it can't do anything for itself.
Like it's not necessary at that point.
But that's just it. It's like a tiny child being murdered by its own parent is horrifying. But I do think that stuns people into silence. But then if like you say the words golden retriever, people are like, what the fuck? Yeah.
Why would you?
You can even just approach it. Like you don't even want us to talk about the 5-year-old.
It somehow makes it seem like they're even more of a monster. But there's this weird bit of humanity that he kept. He didn't even leave the dog in the house. He like brought the dog with him.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Kurt Braunohler has a joke about how Hitler had a dog.
That doesn't seem right. Not that Kurt Braunohler, but that Hitler would have a dog. I get that. That dog probably loved him.
I mean, well, I bet he was a German Shepherd.
It's true. Some
fucking things.
I love German Shepherds.
I do too. I do too.
My mom hates them because of Germany. Mm-hmm. Anyways, goes cold. Okay, after that sighting, the trail goes cold. And since Bishop spoke 6 languages fluently, knew how to fly a plane, and had lived throughout the world and possibly had fake IDs because of his work at the State Department, finding him didn't look good. Law enforcement tried to get his psychotherapy records from his shrink, who Bishop had been seeing once or twice a week for 5 years, but the shrink refused, saying, you know, doctor-patient privilege. But it's been said that the doctor was so shaken by Bishop's crime that he quit his practice, which is, can you imagine not spotting that for 5 fucking years, or having spotted it and not done anything about it?
Like, that's horrible.
What's worse?
Yeah.
Yeah,
not having done anything about it. Like thinking that you were wrong or doubting yourself.
Yeah.
Or something.
Or just being like, am I? But after 5 years, I feel like 5 years of, you just have to be, if you can manipulate a psychotherapist for 5 years, you're some fucking craziness.
Yeah. Also, if he was a military man, I bet you he wasn't all that forthcoming. Isn't that kind of a personality trait of you're not really supposed to be that way in the military?
Well, that's funny that you say that because I read something that said that if you were in whatever rank he was in and you were going to psychotherapy, that was grounds for dismissal.
Oh, shit.
So on top of that, he probably didn't also want to be like, yeah, and I want to murder my family. So like it couldn't even get out that he was in there.
Whoa. So that's so fucked up.
It's so fucked up.
Oh, so getting help for being in like a conflict-based business.
Right.
Where like,
you could have PTSD for whatever reason.
You cannot be in therapy.
Or you're traveling the fucking world and your family's home and it's rough at home. Or you have money issues. It can't be like that anymore.
Or you got left at home between 3 and 7 every goddamn day of the week. Like you were just some sort of...
And you had no idea what time your parents were coming home and you were sick of peanut butter sandwiches.
You had eaten so much toast that you felt sick.
Oh, toast.
God, we ate a lot of toast.
We ate so much toast.
So much...
Cheese toasted this day is one of my favorite things. But of course, my brother would eat all the fucking cheese in the house. So it would be peanut butter toast.
We would do... My sister got really into making quesadillas, but she wouldn't make me one. That was, you know, anything she could pull away, anything she could hold over me.
But quesadilla at that point was a tortilla with a slice of American cheese in the microwave for a minute.
Yes.
And then she crunched it closed.
Yeah. She would get fancy and put it in a pan.
Oh, she thinks she's fucking.
Yeah.
Julia Child.
She thought she was going for it. And I was like, clear the area. I'm trying to butter some crackers. Like, basically all we were trying
buttered
to do.
Buttered crackers. I love it.
Stacking up buttered crackers and then drinking 7-Up. And it's just basically
put a
like
whole one in your mouth at
intake.
Once.
Yeah. I was like, pardon me. I'm trying to get fat for junior high.
Oh my God.
Clear the area.
I have so many feelings.
Yeah.
Right now.
Should we go back to the easier ones, which is family annihilators?
Yeah. All right. So on March 19th, 1976, a grand jury indicts Bishop on 5 counts of first degree murder. But to this day, Karen, Bishop has never been found.
Whoa.
Yep. So there's this photo of him from when he was young that they all show, and he looks a little bit like Lee Harvey Oswald meets John Belushi, if you can picture that.
Oh.
It's weird. Like, you're kind of like, he's kind of hot, but then he has this weird, like, smug, like, tight, close smile that looks creepy since you know what he did.
Mm-hmm.
And then they made one of those busts of him of, like, what he would look like if he were older, and it's super creepy as well, and I'm sure that he's Hugh Hefner. Like, it's yeah. Hugh Hefner. It's Hugh fucking Hefner.
Is the bust the future age?
Can you pull that up? It's a William Bradford Bishop bust.
It's just a cover of Playboy magazine. Stephen, no.
Not Hugh Hefner's picture. He just pulls that up. All right. So there have been 3 credible sightings of Bishop. One was in July 1978. A Swedish woman who had worked with Bishop before the murders said she spotted him. Steven's got it. Right? Am I right?
I mean.
Oh, no.
Let me see. It's totally.
It looks like, is it Frank Langella? No. He's the guy that always plays like a.
He's just like, hey, kid.
Hilarious.
He's Hugh Hefner, right?
Yes. He's looks exactly like Hugh Hefner.
He's missing like the bathrobe.
Yeah. And that's
smoking
it.
Jacket.
Yeah. He's like, if Hugh Hefner had a trucker brother.
Yeah.
That's what that guy looks like.
Creepy. Okay. July 1978, Swedish woman who had worked with him prior to the murders. She said she spotted him twice in a public park in Stockholm, Sweden, in a span of a week. And she stated that she was absolutely certain that it was Bishop.
Hmm.
Then and this is interesting because it's all people who knew him, you know. So in July 1979, he was reported to have been seen by a former U.S. State Department colleague in a restroom in Sorrento, Italy. The colleague greeted him. He said he was bearded. He had personally believed to be Bishop eye to eye. And he asked the man impulsively, hey, you're Brad Bishop, aren't you? The man panicked suddenly, responding in a distinctly American accent saying, oh God, no. And then he ran swiftly out of the restroom and fled, but he started shaking and panicking when he asked him.
Mm-hmm.
This is all like kind of confirmed that these could actually be sightings. It wasn't just like
rando stuff,
like hokey bullshit. On September 19th,
it was kind of corny.
I mean, yeah, it wasn't Unsolved Mysteries, but it was, you know. All right. On September 19th, I'm sure this was on Unsolved Mysteries too. On September 19th, 1994, in Basel, Switzerland, a neighbor who had known a Bishop and his family in Bethesda reports that she had seen Bishop from a few feet away while on vacation. The neighbor described Bishop as well-groomed. So all people who knew him well enough to recognize him. Then, and I thought this was so exciting, a John Doe who was struck by a car while walking down a highway in 1981, who was a person who appeared to be homeless, ended up getting exhumed after a local resident thought that the bust of Bishop looked like this Doe. And I fucking lost my mind. It looks so much like him that you are sure it's him and it's fucking not.
Ugh.
But I think they fucked up the DNA test because it's fucking him.
Wow.
Yeah. Look up the dead body. okay. It doesn't match. Okay. There's also, of course, been talk of Bishop being a victim of the MK Ultra mind control experience by the CIA that went awry, causing him to kill his family, which is like, okay.
Is that the right time frame?
The 60s, 70s? Yeah.
I guess so, yeah.
That they I feel like they dosed a lot of people on acid back then, right?
I think so. But it seemed, that's so close to the 80s. I feel like it was shut down by then. But I mean, look, if people theorize that, it's because it wasn't. And also, it was a secret
government thing. Probably still going on.
It's to this day.
Yeah. Steven is an MK Ultra
I knew it. That's what it is.
It's totally what it is. You're like, and his mustache is a fucking recording device. It's like, because no matter how much we make fun of it, he won't shave it. So up in there.
I love it. He fucking sets the two hugest microphones up every time, but his mustache is the recording device.
These are all fake. You caught me.
You should hear the shit we say when it's not recording and the shit we actually make him edit out. That's the, like, we are Russian operative spies. It's true.
Oh. Well, I do love MKUltra. If you know, somebody was asking if something could get solved.
Right.
Somebody was asking us that the other day, like conversationally. And it's always like, we always say like JonBenet blah, 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 whatever. But then just thinking about that, like, I would love the real deal report on MKUltra.
The list of things that have happened because of it.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Like the real, you know, there was like the one guy that the family's like, there's no way he would have committed suicide. Yeah. And it was like, he jumped out of a window. Right.
Yeah.
And
there was, there's like a million of those.
Yeah.
And they're always like, that would be good.
Yeah. It's so fascinating.
It's also like, it's easy though. You know what I mean? Like, it's one of those things where it's like, was a runaway. It's like, no, it's much more it's much more simple than that or something.
Yeah.
Or that's simple. Okay. Anyways, blah, blah, blah. I think it's more likely that he was depressed. He was also having financial trouble and that he was a fucking dick. If he were still alive today, he would be 80 years old.
Oh.
So he could still be alive.
Yeah.
So everyone go find Hugh Hefner's creepy brother.
So God, that's interesting to be guilty of a crime and run to Stockholm, Sweden and still run into someone that you know.
Ugh,
because like,
how annoying is that?
Right. And because he was in the military, he probably went to military-ish places, right? Like
when he
places he knew from having gone there before for his job.
You think he wouldn't though, because then people would recognize him there.
Yeah.
But he also, he also spent some time in Africa before the murders too. So that seems like the most logical place to go because.
But he wasn't black, right?
No.
So he would stand out probably too much.
I think there's a lot of white people there.
Oh, true, true, true.
You know, apartheid and all that. Shit.
Okay. I just immediately was like, yeah, he won't go stand on the savannah, Karen. He's not going to just go like, he's not going to walk into a National Geographic special and then be like, hope nobody finds me here near the zebras who are trying to drink water during a drought.
Yeah. This tribe.
What's wrong with my brain?
This tribe let me come in and join the fray.
But I mean, I guess what I meant was, there's those places where like, it's almost like you would, of all the places you would have to list, okay, this guy ran, where'd he go? He went to LA. He went to California.
Yeah.
People always go west. Instead, he went east and then he went to a place where like Stockholm, Sweden is just like nobody really.
You would just blend.
Yeah.
There's a lot of places you could blend. And you know, it was the time when like you didn't need a passport or, you know, your name didn't even have to be on the ticket. And he had a weak start because they didn't, head start.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they didn't identify the bodies until then.
Yeah. He was all free and clear.
What a creep. He didn't just murder them and leave their bodies. He murdered them, drove 6 hours away, dug a fucking shallow hole and put the gasoline that he had bought that day on the bodies and lit them. His mom, his high school sweetheart, and his three children.
That's almost the same as John List.
It's so much like John List.
Except, and not to say my guy was better than your guy, but John List shot everybody in the back of the head. Nobody knew anything was happening.
Yeah.
He just took them out from behind.
I think he might have as well, if you're going to fucking.
Well, no, I was just thinking of like.
Yours has a good, I guess they both have good closures where it's like the money was in the ceiling the whole time.
I know.
On John List.
No, but this one I'm saying, it's the murder is so much more personal and awful and like, you know, hammer marks in the ceiling type of shit.
He's where not like trying to end it quick.
Yeah, you're overkilling your own children.
And you're hurting them.
What the fuck?
But he waited till they were sleeping. He didn't come home until they were asleep. And then his mom was on a walk with the dog that she'd do every night.
It's just not.
You can't find a lot of details about how it happened either, which is like, there's no like, in this room, this happened while his wife was cooking or whatever the fuck.
Also, what was he like? Just like, if you were in the cafeteria at the same time, do you think he was like clearly one of those, like a closed fist of a person? Yeah. Or do you think it was all like still Rodgers run deep and he was just like chill and nothing was going on?
There was not a single thing that I saw that was like, and you always see this, everyone said he was such a great guy and everyone's like, so I don't think he was.
He could have been tightly wound.
Yeah. I don't think people weren't like we were so surprised.
Right.
No one said that.
Yeah.
As far as I could tell.
Fuck.
Yeah. So that is Family Annihilator, William Bradford Bishop.
Wow. Bill Bishop.
Yeah.
That's like, I've never heard of that guy. And that's truly awful.
Yeah, isn't that creepy?
Also, once you kill them, you're gonna run anyway. Why do you have to burn the bodies?
You got that head start.
But like, that's just one chore you don't have to do. Like, you've killed your whole family. Yeah.
They're probably not gonna get found for a week.
But I mean, like, either way, it's not like you killed one member of your family and everyone else doesn't know what's happening or something. It's like you've taken out an entire family unit. People are going to catch on no matter what the state of their corpses is.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so fucked up. I mean, it's too much.
It's pretty amazing that they were able to actually identify the bodies, because if he hadn't left that shovel behind, they would have never gone. They would have never talked to Bethesda, Maryland, because they identified it as one of two hardware stores in Bethesda.
And it was hundreds of miles away, right? You said
6 hours away or something.
Fuck.
So if he hadn't kind of fucked up and left a shovel behind, they would have never been traced to each other.
Did which he want probably to get
caught? Maybe it was probably his. I don't think he wanted to get caught.
No.
You don't burn bodies. You specifically don't want to get caught if you burn bodies.
It's just, he did everything the worst way possible.
He really did. And he was never fucking found, and which is so disappointing.
Yeah, but he got that military edge. He's like a Bourne-esque. He's a Jason Bourne type.
Yeah.
Bad Bourne.
Yeah, bad Bourne. Hey, how about one positive thing that happened? Let's get out of there. What about, so we try to end this with something positive, because we don't want to end on a Family Annihilator.
A thing that makes us happy, thing that we like.
Yeah.
A thing that we've noticed lately that's fun.
Yeah. You just shook your head terrifyingly at me. Mine is that because 3 o'clock to 7 o'clock is so hard for... What the fuck? I hate neighbors.
That was creepy.
They just moved in, so they're like putting paintings up and shit.
We're podcasting.
Also, that it just was so light. It was really creepy.
Yeah.
They're trying to be quiet.
Okay. Okay. So from 3 to 7. So it's hard for me. So the thing I've been doing this past week to try to like make it positive.
Did Mimi scare the shit out of you?
Hi, little girl. The thing, I've been laying out at the pool in the sun, and it's been fucking phenomenal.
Oh, that's good.
It's been making me so happy and so like I feel like I'm in paradise.
That's really good. I wonder if you had maybe a little vitamin D deficiency and you need a little sunlight, a little, what do they call it? Weather depression or whatever? Yeah,
definitely. And it's just this thing of like, okay, here's celebrating life in a different way than alcohol and charcuterie.
Yes.
Which, man, still sounds so much better, but whatever.
It's definitely faster. But it's so relaxing when you're outside. I've been actually sitting outside at my house too.
Nice.
It's just so relaxing. And it's been mine. Okay, I guess mine will be, I walked my dogs in the neighborhood kind of near me, which is nice, last night. And it was as if all the jasmine in the whole neighborhood bloomed at one time.
I know.
It was crazy. It's walking around a neighborhood and it smelled like the inside of a florist shop. Was one of the weirdest things of all time.
There's this moment in LA, and it's such a quick moment, where all the jasmine blooms. And it only happens for like a very short time during the year. And it's fucking fabulous.
It's crazy. And when you, like, I was coming home from something and from my, from like the lift to the front door. I was, the smell was so beautiful and strong. I was like, I have to walk my dogs right now. Like I need to be out in this air.
I love that.
It was very cool.
That's a good one.
And also I, because I've been in my house doing nothing but like binge watching TV
and cleaning the walls
and wiping down walls like a weird mental patient, just kind of like staring.
The walls must be clean,
but they are. The difference it makes when your walls are clean, I just highly recommend.
You don't think about it until someone else does it that you pay them to do it, and you're like, oh.
But also, when you get one of those magic erasers, mm-hmm. they really do work.
I know, I love it's, it.
What's it, a Mr. Clean thing?
Yeah, or you can get a Target brand.
It's like a little bleach sponge.
Yeah.
It's a white sponge that when you touch it to things, it just makes marks and nicks and shitty looking things go away.
I bet it's made of asbestos.
I hold it in my hand for like hours at a time.
Let it dissolve.
Like, all of this is leaching into my system.
You know what?
Maybe to clean it out a little bit.
I mean, the end days are going to come before you can die of asbestos poisoning. Probably, right?
What if the magic eraser is the new green juice? And that's the way to detox. Is just to magic erase both hands.
Yeah.
Every morning.
I'm just picturing that. I think I can get Mimi to meow again.
Yes, special guest.
There's
all right.
Someone post. Yeah, go to our Instagram.
Wait, thanks for listening.
Oh, thank you so much for listening. You guys are the best.
We appreciate you, your support, and having fun with us.
Yeah.
And we want you to stay sexy.
And don't get murdered.
Mimi? Want a cookie? Mimi, say it.
Mimi?
Want a cookie?
Not you. Mimi.
Look at Mimi.
She won't do it.
Come on. Yay!
I talked over her. Right, let's see if she'll do it again. You can cut all the shit out. So
there she is.
Wait, Mimi.
Elvis.
She's mad.
I know. Elvis, you want a cookie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's how it's done.
Bye.